Do you invest in ETFs? Whether you're thinking, what in the world is an ETF? Or you're looking for the next opportunity to add to your portfolio. GlobalX has you covered. From big tech to bonds and bars of gold, GlobalX offers a wide range of exchange-traded funds. Go beyond ordinary with GlobalX ETFs. Visit globalxetfs.com.au. That's globalxetfs.com.au.
InvestSmart's portfolios are turning 10. And to celebrate, 10 InvestSmart boot camps are up for grabs. This self-paced online course is ideal for both seasoned investors and those who are just starting out. Valued at $99, you could win a spot on this highly rated course. To enter the competition and for terms and conditions, simply visit investsmart.com.au/win. Don't miss out on this chance to learn from experts and take your investing to the next level. Simply visit investsmart.com.au/win. Good luck.
Hey there, here's a quick note. This podcast contains general financial advice only. That means it's not specific to you, your needs, goals, or objectives, so don't act on the information until you've spoken with your financial advisor. You'll find our full disclosure, disclaimer, and link to our financial services guide in the show notes.
Luke Laridiff, how are you going, mate?
Rasky, how are you, mate?
Pretty good, mate. Pretty good. Today, we're going to be talking about ProMedicus, about WiseTech, and two other companies being Webjet and RPM Global. I feel like if you're a technology investor and you're looking at the mid-caps in Australia, these are the four companies that will probably be up on your list. Maybe you could swap, say, Xero for Webjet, but these are going to be some really interesting conversations and businesses for people to learn about if they don't already know a lot about them. You come on the show pretty regularly, Luke, and you know, Seneca has been featured on the Australian Investors Podcast quite a few times, spoken at events and these types of things. On the back of the last catch-up we had here on the show, when we spoke about a few different companies and people can go back and look at them, we offered folks to get in contact with you to have a bit of a portfolio review where they can give you a call, just book into your calendar and have a chat. Did you have a few folks follow up?
Yeah, we did. We did have a few of the RAS community hit me up, which was very nice. Nice to meet some of the people out there who are listening to me rant on, which is always good. But I had some good conversations. Hopefully was able to add some value for people looking at their portfolios and talking about a few companies. Some stuff like, you know, companies, they're not companies that I really follow or could help with, but lots of them I could at least give, you know, my opinion. And obviously I'm just one of many people who, you know, who've got a view, but certainly it's been enjoyable and yeah, been enjoying those calls.
Cool. And they're completely free for anyone that wants to take Luke up on that offer. So feel free, there's a link in your show notes to get in contact with Luke and book yourself a bit of a portfolio review. We'll just have a chat with him about the companies we're going to talk about today, which are really, really interesting. Before we dive into those, I did want to ask you a bit of an icebreaker, and it's kind of like the hardest icebreaker to kick things off. Normally you have an icebreaker and it's a good thing to get the ball rolling, but I'm going to ask you for your worst investment. I don't think I've ever asked you this. So I think worst investment, how it came to be, what it was, what happened, like outcome, lesson learned. Give us the whole juicy story.
Yeah, sure. Worst investment I've been on the market was a company called DXN Limited, or the Data Exchange Network. A guy I knew was putting it together and we invested in the IPO. It was a edge data center business, which in theory, you know, should be doing well and be able to sign up customers and sign up, essentially sell racks in their data center. Aside from some, you know, terrible leasing, general mismanagement and inability to sell, you know, that business is still listed, but, you know, it's gone from 20 cents to trading up 2 cents now. So, you know, we managed to sell out for a bit better pricing than that. But at the same time, yeah, it was definitely, personally torched a few dollars there. And yeah, I suppose lessons learned. Just assuming that stuff that's in the right sector and with experienced people is going to work, or that sales are easy, I think it's one. I think two, also, like, just investing with people who on face value were fine, but probably I didn't have, you know, operating experience, or I didn't have sort of firsthand knowledge of how they were going to run that business. It's something that, you know, now, particularly early stage businesses, I'm really careful with, and I probably only, I almost only invest with people that I know or at least understand their personality on a personal level. So probably my trust barrier is a bit higher than it was before. If it went to plan, like, it wasn't valuation that caught me out there. It's execution, and execution risk in any small business, I think, is always present. So it comes down to the quality of the people. And I know you're sort of a big proponent of that, but, I think, that was, you know, a combination of bad decision making compounded by more bad decision making, also coupled with probably some bad luck in other instances, in other places as well, which unfortunately is just par for the course when it comes to investing.
No, it is indeed. And not to start the conversation of too much of a downer, but I guess maybe it does add some balance, because the next four companies, depending on the time frame you look at, have shot the lights out. So it adds a bit of balance to the overall conversation. But, and we've all been there. And I think, like you said, that's par for the course of investing. It's not, you know, whenever you look at one of those long-term price charts or whatever, it's always bottom, well, not always, but oftentimes bottom left to top right. But it's only when you zoom in or you actually focus on things, you realize that it's never a straight line, and it's really harrowing at sometimes. And sometimes you just get it completely wrong. I've had some absolute shockers, many of which have featured on the show before. So that's just the industry we find ourselves in, mate. So
that old thing, like, I think a lot of people get caught, particularly like if they're relatively new to investing. And when I mean relatively new, like less than 5 years of experience, they think that, like, you're going to have a portfolio of all these amazing green stocks that have made you money. And the reality is, if you want to find 10 and 20 bag plus opportunities, you have to invest in a lot of companies that aren't like that. And yes, you know, if you get it right, you will do well on those particular names, but they average out with the times when you don't get it right. And it's, you know, you are chasing, you know, when they say high risk, high return, what they're talking about is low probability, you know, of success outcomes. And unless you've, you know, got some skill, you know, you're not going to be able to uncover the good opportunities and the things that have worked out. So, you know, without DXN, we don't have Zip. Without DXN, we don't have Vulcan. We don't have the things that have done really well for us and where we've made, you know, multiples and multiples of our money. I think it's unreasonable for people to think that they're just going to pick the things that are going to go amazingly well and have a portfolio of perfect investments, because anyone who's been playing the game for long enough kind of knows that's just not how it works.
Yeah, absolutely it is. And I think that's even more pronounced. Like, if you choose to, you know, fight the battle of trying to find multi-baggers, it comes with the volatility, and that almost should be embraced as opposed to trying to avoid that, because that's part of what you're doing. It's what you are seeking. You wrote an article that we published actually at the time of recording this morning, two ingredients for finding 10 baggers like Altium. We've spoken about multi-baggers and companies that go up multiples of their the value that you pay for them. The companies we're about to talk about exhibit some of those tendencies. So what are some of those ingredients? Like, what are some of the ingredients that lead companies to multi-bag?
I think particularly in this space, it's the ability to identify a company when their sales are going to continue to grow, but their costs aren't. There's a differential in the rates of change there. And, you know, we call that operating leverage. Doesn't have to be that complicated. You don't have to sort of, you know, give it a name. It's pretty straightforward, is that sometimes people make investments in businesses, they start to generate sales, whether they're profitable or unprofitable, for a period of time, and then they get to a point where the costs just don't really go up a lot more, but the sales can continue to grow. That sort of organic growth, if it can go on for a number of years, can add significant value for shareholders, because not only are the earnings going up, or the E part of the PE ratio going up, generally people are willing to pay higher PE ratios or higher prices for businesses that operate on incrementally higher and higher margins. So, that is a sort of two gears working in the same direction type scenario, and that's where, you know, some of these multi-bagger opportunities kind of exist. And if you can identify them early, which, you know, that's our goal, and not pay the fight, you know, the price after the fact, I suppose, yeah, you can do it and usually make decent wedge of cash.
Yeah, you can. And I think that's, like you said, that's kind of like interlaced with the companies that don't succeed, and you can follow all these checklists and have all these rules of thumb or however you want to do it. And some of them just simply don't work. And I love that approach, and I tend to do it as my core, my satellite positions more so than my core, but I absolutely love to do it. And I think that the longer you do this thing called investing, the more respect you have for taking a portfolio view of building these types of companies up. We're going to start with two businesses which I don't believe you own, which is ProMedicus and WiseTech. No, you're shaking your head. Yep. So let's start with that. Let's start with WiseTech being the biggest of the companies. It's about $30 billion in market cap, and I think they lost count of the PE ratio of a few months ago. But
it's on 84 times.
And this is a business that is already profitable, right? This is a business that is a good business. It's a really good business. And
Not bad.
I think it's a wonderful business. I think so. Just to backpedal for people, the business was founded by Richard White, and it creates software for logistics companies and freight forwarding type businesses. So if you're sending parcels overseas, it has a platform called CargoWise One. And it's grown in two ways: a bit of organic growth and acquisitive growth, where it's bought other businesses and tried to bolt them in. So,
what do you reckon the ratio is there, Rasky, between acquired growth and organic growth?
I'd say this is my answer to these types of businesses. It's almost impossible for us to know.
It is impossible for us to know due to a deed of cross guarantee, which is a bit of an accounting sleight of hand where the acquired subsidiary's profits are actually masked by the whole group. So this is when I say this isn't a bad business. I just don't think it's a great business. Is these are the sort of like little accounting red flags that, you know, sure, no one cares while the share price is going up, and everyone will care if the share price starts to go down. And that's why I'm sort of a bit, you know, capitalized development costs. Like there's a few little things that just kind of go to me, maybe this business isn't as good as everybody thinks it is.
Okay. So this is a business, you're referring to something that was aired quite a few years ago by some notable short sellers. And basically suggests that, correct me if I'm wrong, mate, that effectively when they buy these other businesses and they quote unquote bring them into the CargoWise platform, effectively the profitability of those businesses get gobbled up. And because the auditing of international subsidiaries isn't as easy, let's say, as people might expect, are you suggesting that maybe it's a bit harder to get a true picture of what's actually organic growth and what's acquired?
Okay, well, let's break it down into, forget about logistics technology companies for a minute. You and I run a lemonade stand. There's another lemonade stand in the next suburb. We're going to go and acquire it. And our strategy is to roll up 50 of these lemonade stands across Melbourne. Okay, great. We put them all together and our profits have gone up 150% on the back of this thing. And we look like we're operating on, you know, are we actually any good at buying these businesses? Was it the original, is it the original business that we're operating that's driving this? Is it one or two of these acquisitions? Is there, you know, a bunch that aren't doing so well and a bunch that are, you know, most other businesses that are a roll-up type strategy. And you know, that's where I sort of classify WiseTech really in lots of ways, a sort of roll-up type strategy where they've got critical mass in a particular niche market is, you know, you want to buy on 5x earnings and trade on 10x earnings, and you can just consistently create this cost of capital arbitrage that adds value for shareholders. Now, I'm not saying that that's not what WiseTech are doing. My question is that if in that instance, the question we shouldn't be asking is CargoWise a good piece of software? The question we should be asking is are WiseTech any good at making these acquisitions? and how long is this acquisition runway going to carry on for? So, you know, if you're willing to buy the stock today on 80 whatever times earnings, I would expect you to have some pretty clear answers to those two questions. Now, I've asked lots of WiseTech shareholders about those two things, and no one's given me a decent answer. Mm. And so, you know, my arguments are not that there's anything untoward here to talk about, more so that these questions remain unanswered as far as I can tell. And on that kind of multiple, I can almost buy any business in the world. And certainly any business kind of demonstrating the sort of growth and margins of WiseTech. You know, we're going to talk about ProMedicus, which is, you know, in my view, a much better business. So I don't know. Like, I think everything for a price, I would rather buy WiseTech on a roll-up type multiple, not on a insane tech multiple. And if I'm going to buy growth, I want to pay for organic growth or acquired growth that I can see and understand, not that I hope's there one day when somebody tells me about it eventually.
Yep. So let me ask.
Too scathing. I've been very too.
No. It's fine. And this is the job of an investor, is to be skeptical. I think, like, cautiously optimistic is probably the way I phrase it. But
yeah,
if WiseTech is listening, WiseTech, if you are listening,
no, I don't.
If they could come out and show you something, like, what would, because in the case of our lemonade stand, we would probably know internally what the numbers are, right? Because we would know, because it's our business. We see the bank accounts. What would they show to make it seem like the strategy makes sense? Like, would they have to show, say, this is the list of acquisitions and this is their operating profit from the last year or over time?
Show me, you know, if you'd made.
Show me the money.
Show me the money. Like, show. Show me you paid $100 for this business. It was generating $7 of operating profit. We picked up $2 of synergies by, you know, a year of synergies, and we've been able to grow that business from 9 to 12. You know, I'm not asking for a lot. You just want some transparency on the strategy. And I mean, at the end of the day, WiseTech would tell me to go and get. Right. And I'll tell you why. They go, our cost of capital, our share price is trading on 88 times earnings. Other investors do not seem to care about the internal machinations or our apparent lack of transparency, Luke. So you can stick your acquisitions up raw. And, you know, like, and that is their prerogative, right? I'm just not going to contribute to further reducing their cost of capital. And if I was going to pay that sort of price for a company, that would be my threshold to invest. Now, you're out there and you want to do what you want to do, you think you know better than me, fantastic. Whatever, that's what takes a market. Look forward to seeing you in the boxing ring every day. It's just, for me, I...
You like cleaner financials?
Well, not cleaner. I just want it to be reasonable. I just don't think that it's reasonable to ask somebody to invest in a company that's main business is acquiring businesses and never telling me if those acquired acquisitions are any good or not. You know, like, it's that simple. Sorry, you can bleep me out later.
Impossible to bleep, I'm afraid. But no. But it's interesting because I guess the question is, like, even if it is taking time for them to integrate those acquisitions into CargoWise One. Like, say it takes 2 or 3 years on that. I don't know what it is, but say it is 2 or 3 years.
Uh-huh.
And up until that point, they could probably still run it like a separate business and report it internally. So potentially we should be able to see that, right? And then eventually maybe they do get fully migrated in and it just becomes consolidated financials and end of story. But I hear what you're saying is that acquisition strategy, they do, not necessarily in the case of WiseTech in isolation here, but just generally, The old cliche is, like, be there for a good time, not a long time, so to speak, because you just don't know when that strategy stops working out. So that's an interesting one. So it's basically a pass for now, maybe at a lower, quote unquote, valuation. It's something that you will be able to, like, justify that. And just for people's benefit, I did plot all four of these over time as a price to sales ratio, just to try and give a sense of the top line. So this is not profitability. Prometicus is 63 times sales. This is what I got on my numbers in Ticker Luke. WiseTech at 25 times sales. Webjet at 6. RPM Global, which we'll talk about in a minute, 4.4. So massive, massive step change down for those final two, which we'll talk about in a minute. Let's jump to Prometicus, which you mentioned is a nice business in terms of its quality, you know, super high margins, cash flow generation. People know this business that listen to the show regularly, but just in case you don't, it's a software business as well, but it creates software for radiology clinics and hospitals. We've had Dr. Sam Huppert on the show quite a few times, or once here and once at our event.
Yeah, he was at the event. What do you think? The event I did with you.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. So what do you think about the business?
Look, it's a great business. It's completely different to WiseTech in a sense that it's growing, it's organically growing, right? Yeah.
It's taken forever to make one acquisition, which was just the other month. So, and it was right.
So, they seem to have a little in-house team of, you know, boffins, and they pay them roughly the same every year, and they're able to improve the product and continue to, you know, lead the market and gain market share. They got a long runway still ahead of them, big addressable market, you know, global aging population, increasing tendency for people to need images. And as a result, an increasing quality of those images, which means the file sizes get bigger, which means this business sort of continues to grow on that sort of basis as well. So there's a few kind of drivers here of why this is a decent business. There'd be very few businesses on the ASX that operate at sort of 50% inbound margins. Outside of, you know, a mining company at the height of the cycle. It's a rare thing. But at 111 times PE, like would I buy it? No, I would. Now, am I wrong? Maybe. Like, you know, maybe I should buy it. Maybe it's gonna outperform from here. But you're going to need to own this thing. Well, you're already paying for the next 10 years of kind of growth.
Yeah.
In our view. So, whatever, you have to be 100% certain this business is going to deliver consensus growth for the next 10 years as per to pay those kind of prices. So, you're paying for upside beyond from 2034 onwards. So that's sort of where my head's at with it. There's not many companies that I'd be willing to buy on 100 times earnings.
Yeah.
To me, you're just on a hiding to nothing chances on a probability weighted basis there.
Yeah, it's fair. And you like appropriately weight like a common sense valuation into how you go about business. And that's fine. Just as a bit of a reference point for people, Prometicus is really only traded below 40 times sales. I'm just using sales as a genuine, general like yardstick to make it comparable, just for everyone's benefit. This is not a deep dive into valuation theory, but the last time it traded below 40 times was during 2022 for the space of a month. You'd have to go back to, basically, looks like late 2020.
I've got it on PEs. Between 2014 and 2020, it was sort of on between 30 and 50 times PE. Yeah. Now, for a business that's growing and generating, you know, returns on invested capital in the 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s, I don't mind and growing like it has. I wouldn't really have an issue with owning the stock there. Now, is it the kind of company that I'm looking for on a day-to-day basis? No. But is it the kind of company I would own? Yeah, sure. But now it's on 100 times earnings. I just think you'll get a chance to buy this thing cheaper. And I do just think that sort of as a macro comment, Aussie tech has kind of gone away over the last 3 months, let's call it. And it's on the back of sort of macro stuff that's not really related to any of the businesses or what's going on the underlying, but more so ASX denominated money trying to play a US denominated tech rally, essentially. So, you know, that's sort of my 2 cents for what it's worth. But yeah, wouldn't have any issues buying Prometicus. It's just a question of what price I'd be willing to pay for it, and probably a more nuanced and detailed conversation.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I full disclosure, I do still own quite a few shares. I own bought them many, 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 many moons ago. Very fortunate to do that, and still hold on to a very small parcel for myself, just as a kind of keepsake to what is possible when you have a wonderful business, like you said. And you do have to live through a lot of the pain of ups and downs and ups and downs. Although with Prometicus, that's got to be said that it has been also rare in the fact that it hasn't had that many drawdowns where people would genuinely consider this like kind of like existential threat, where some of the multi-baggers do have those moments where you're like, okay, Tesla's done forever. You know, this is going straight, you know, from the tent straight into the tip.
Yeah.
You know, but Prometicus hasn't had that. So for people that think that that's normal, that's really not normal. But it's a wonderful business. It's good to have on your watch list as far as I'm concerned. And I'm trying to think off the top of my head in terms of like tech companies, I would say it's probably the highest quality in Australia. I can't think of others that could say
it. It's arguably the highest quality company on the ASX. Like,
yeah, true.
Right? Yeah. It is a, like I said to you, there's not that many businesses that can do that sort of growth on those sort of margins and still be expanding and still have 93% of their addressable market ahead of them.
Yeah.
It's just not,
it's not common.
Not a common thing. Like it's yeah. And you know, for that reason, if someone wanted to make the argument to me about Prometicus on 111 times earnings, it would be difficult for me to disagree with them. Now I might have a personal preference and, you know, people pay me for my personal biases and preferences. That's my job, is to invest the way that I think is best. It's not the only way that works. And there's lots of approaches and styles, and I'm sure Prometicus would fit into lots of other people's really, you know, the style of investing they like to do.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, it's one of those businesses, if you want to do your research in advance. So if it does suffer one of those falls, you can be there to pick it up when it falls down. We've got two other companies, and these two companies, correct, just give me a nod, Luke, through the camera. You own these two companies?
Yeah, we own them both.
Yeah, good. Okay, so that's good. So now we can talk more about some of the more, I guess, bullish or positive takes that you have on the businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe if we start with, why don't we go with Webjet? So Webjet, obviously online travel destination, you can go there, you can book your travel, going overseas, what have you. Can you give us like the bird's eye view of this business,
and then
also why you like it, because I'm curious about this one.
So the overriding thesis for Webjet has got nothing to do with online travel bookings, and in fact, this is why this opportunity exists, is because everybody thinks that Webjet is what they use Webjet for, and it's actually not. So Webjet, yes, 25 to 30% of their earnings still come from the Webjet that you and I know, webjet.com.au,
mm-hmm.
Where you go on there and you can look at Qantas and Virgin flights and you can book your trip to Sydney or whatever and add an Ibis hotel or whatever you want to do. But that's not why we own the business. The reality is for the past few years, Webjet have been transitioning or increasingly growing, I should say, their web beds business, which essentially is like a booking.com or hotelbeds.com, where they distribute other people's hotel rooms. And that business is growing at 30% CAGR at the moment. And there is essentially no incremental spend required for that business to continue to grow like that. So whilst Webjet is priced on, you know, 12, 13 times earnings, like a normal industrial business operating on 10 or 15% return on invested capital, we think when you look back through the lens in 5 or 6 years' time, you might be looking at a Webjet that's doing 30 or 40% return on invested capital trailing. And which is 95% of its earnings coming from this, you know, highly value-add division of its business. So, you know, our job as investors is not to, I think, having done a lot of these with you and the other media and podcasts that I do, I have learned that a lot of people, self-directed investors at home and people investing in the markets, spend a lot of time looking at history, historical returns on capital, historical earnings growth, historical everything. There's like so little value add in doing all of that. What matters is the future and being able, if you want to make real money and generate real returns, it's about being identify companies like Webjet where there's an opportunity for the business to change. It's a step change in quality. And as a result, you get a significant re-rate in valuation. Now, if you can find me a business that's trading on 30% ROIC on the ASX, it's not trading on 30 times earnings, feel free. I'm happy to have a chat about it because the reality is it will. You can see it with the numbers that ProMedicus and WiseTech trade at. I would argue that, you know, WebBeds, when you start to compare that to some of the listed peers, and there's going to be the one listing later this year, but whether that's Booking.com or Airbnb, you go look, they're on 20 times EV to EBITDA. WebJet, like I said, is on sort of 12 or 13. It is that WebBeds business is a ripper and, excuse me, it's going to be a significant driver of growth for them for a number of years to come. Market's not really caught onto it yet, and everybody at home, from what I understand, still talks to me about booking flights on Webjet. It's just like, actually, it's got nothing to do with what I do anymore, really.
Just a quick question before we move on. So you're obviously saying that, like, the return on invested capital, is that indicator that
it's going to come back?
Yeah.
It's going to change. Change in it over time that you only know that it's generated those returns in hindsight when it's too late and the share price is already trading on 30 or 40 times.
Absolutely. But my quick question, you may not know off the top of your head, roughly how much of the business is WebBeds?
70% at the moment. And the rates of growth are that, like, much higher than the WebJet business. So I think the WebJet business is doing, as in the webjet.com.au division, is doing, you know, teens in growth and they're doing sort of 30s.
Wow. Okay. That's really interesting. I didn't know that it was growing so fast. I knew that they had the business. I just didn't know how fast it was growing. Yeah. The final business that we'll quickly take a look at is a company that we've spoken about quite a few times on the show going back many years ago. There's a company called RPM Global. Now, please don't be confused if the ticker symbol is RUL. It's RUL. So remember that ticker symbol and not the other one that trades for RPM. It's RUL is the one we're talking about. So this is a business, Luke, that historically operated in, you know, mining advisory and consulting and these types of things. Early days, it was known as Runge Pinnock Monaco, RPM, that's where it gets its name. It's since changed to RPM Global Holdings. And in about 2012, CEO Richard Matthews took over the business and had a software ERP background and has transitioned the business significantly towards software. So in some ways, I can see a parallel between RPM's transition and probably what you're trying to spot with Webjet, in that there's a division of the business that people should be paying attention to. But historically, that hasn't been as evident in the financials. Would I be right?
Yeah, man, you're pretty much bang on. I think, you know, we talked about identifying when operating leverage is going to turn up and what happens when, if you go back and you study some of the, you know, I'll use Adobe as the example, but there's lots of examples from tech, and you've probably got some good examples from the ASX here, is transitioning from sort of advisory upfront transactional, you know, revenue to software recurring revenue usually incurs a revenue hit and it incurs an increase in costs. So it's a pretty hard thing to do, but when a business does it and then they go past where they were before, normally the margins start to blow out. And that's exactly what's happening at RPM Global at the moment, is that the margins are starting to blow out, the profits are starting to blow out relative to the revenue growth. And, you know, you're getting it on, and you will look, and most people will look this up and see it trading on like 21 times EV to EBITDA. But they actually expense all of their R&D. So you need to strip that back to get it on an apples and apples basis, which means it's only trading on like 11 or 12 times.
Right.
I think if you wanted to compare it to, you know, Pro Medicus or WiseTech, say, for example. So this is a business that we think, you know, it's a significant holding in our, so Webjet's currently our largest holding in the Seneca Australian Shares SMA, and RPM would be one of our top couple in the small cap fund. And we think that that business, again, can trade on, you know, double the multiple it's currently trading on, and the earnings could easily, you know, triple over the next 5 years. So,
yeah, it's interesting. They provided some guidance recently. So they've done their half year for 2024, but they've guided to the full year. They expect revenue to be up between 110 and 115. They might even exceed that. Last year was 98. They expect EBITDA to be probably about 22 million, up from 12 million. And here's the thing, where operating leverage, you just see it falling down the income statement. You see it getting bigger and bigger. Profit before tax, they're expecting to be around 17 million, up from 5 million. So the further you go down, like you've been saying this whole conversation, is, wow, that's really just like dripping further and further down the income statement, and you're getting more margin expansion, which is pretty awesome.
So can this business grow, you know, on 10 or 11, 12 times EV to EBITDA, can this business grow at least, I mean, I'm kind of betting that it can grow at least 5% top line. If it can grow 5% top line for the next 5 years, realistically, the profits will probably double over that period. Now, yeah. I think this business can do 15, 20% top line growth. So, Lord help my FY30 earnings estimates. But you don't have to be, you know, to buy a company like this, I don't have to price in really anything in the future. I just like, you know, it's just got to be a decent business that keeps ticking along.
Mm.
It's priced. And, you know, you're not going to multi-bag your money in Pro Medicus over the next 5 years, I guarantee you. Like, it's, you know what I mean? It's just not going to happen, right? So you might make 30%, you might do 15% per annum. Like, I'm not saying it's not a, you know, you're not going to do well, but it's not, you're not going to make 500% returns buying Medicus. You might if you buy RPM Global. You just might. And that's the sort of, you know, people say, oh, how do you generate returns? How do you actually pick stocks? This is how you pick stocks. You know, it's not just about understanding all the stuff that that's already in the paper or in the history. You got to understand what's going to happen in the future and how much the market of that's pricing in and what they're missing.
I remember when I talked about this business, said it could become a $250 to $300 million business. It's now $490 million. And people are like, how could that happen?
This will not exist in 2 years. The reality is that there are too many potential acquirers for this business.
Yeah. Big software companies, big mining companies, big whatever.
This thing's gone. Like, 2 years max. Like, max.
Which would be a shame for a long-time investor.
It'll be a shame, right? This thing's going to go for $1 billion and then it's going to be dishes done. And, you know, probably going to be a fantastic little business inside someone else's big business for another 15, 20 years. But, I just can't see it hanging around. There's no way they're going to sell it for 15 times EBITDA. They get EBITDA. So, registers tight, you know, I just think it's a great business. So we're pretty high conviction that.
And the thing is that you can be high conviction too, because you've got a lot of good insider management and ownership, and you've got a business that sells software subscriptions on 3 to 5 year terms, and people can't really rip it out once it's in there. So,
well, like that, man, like, you know, mining companies deal with, and I wrote this in our RAS article, but, you know, it's dangerous work with high value assets and high value people. You don't just change planning software. You don't just change, you know, what you do, you know, willy nilly. Once they're in there, their chance to cross sell, you know, the implicit trust across the business is just going to be a real opportunity for them. They've demonstrated they've got an ability to do that. The businesses they've acquired over the journey, they do provide really good transparency on, and they're really clear about what they're doing. So, I think it's a beauty, look forward to generating a heap of returns for investors.
Yeah, it's RPM Global, ASX RUL, Webjet, WEB, WiseTech, WTC, and Prometicus PME. Mate, this has been heaps of fun. People can book in a portfolio review. You can go and challenge Luke on his assertion about WiseTech or Prometicus. Book in a call with him.
I don't want some logistics guru ringing me up. You know, like, oh.
Well, maybe you do. Maybe you do.
Probably do, but. let me live in my hazy bubble and be annoyed by all shit.
Yeah. But seriously, you can book you with Luke. There's a link in the show notes if you want to have a chat with him. And mate, I always appreciate this. I always appreciate you spending some time looking at the companies that everyone sends in. So if you do want us to look at a company in the future, send it in, use the link in your show notes that says ask a question and just volunteer some companies for us to take a look at. Mate, on with your day. Have a wonderful afternoon and I'll speak to you soon.
Thanks, Alan.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. Before you go, I wanted to share some things with you. Specifically, I wanted to tell you about the 10 ways that Rask could help you in 2024. As many of you know, Rask has grown to become one of the biggest investing and finance platforms in Australia. Across our podcasts, our websites, our memberships, and so on, we now engage around 200,000 Aussies. Which, considering we started in a humble lounge room on a Kmart desk, one of those old fake white wooden ones, I'm pretty ecstatic about where we are 6 years later. As part of becoming one of Australia's biggest platforms for wealth creation and preservation, we now have a very special position in the country in that we can bring you some of the best, most thoughtful, expert-driven ways to protect and grow your wealth. And I'm going to share some of those with you now. I've got 10 ways that we can potentially help you or match you with someone who can. The first thing that I want to tell you about is the biggest step we've ever taken at Rask, which is the launch of our Rask Invest platform. This is a platform that lets our team, led by me, invest for you, primarily through low-cost, diversified ETFs. We'll have three strategies at launch, and every investor who comes through can pick one of the three strategies, being a balanced strategy, a growth strategy, and a high growth strategy. The balanced strategy focuses on passive income, and the high growth strategy focuses on longer term compounding. You will find a link in your podcast player to register your interest. We will be taking off soon. Number two, if you prefer to DIY your investing, you can join me and over 4,000 members inside Rask Core. That's our full ETF and ASX share research membership community. You can join now and you'll get updated ETF portfolio recommendations every quarter, as well as ongoing ASX and global stock research. Every single month, we call them the All-Star Stocks. You get that alongside the ETF portfolios as well as other members-only content. It's called Rask Core. Number three, our first ever partnership with a business other than our own was a business by the name of Blusk, which has since become Flint Group. Flint Group is led by Chris Bates and Christian Stevens, two of Australia's most highly regarded mortgage brokers. Already over 200 Rask community members have begun the Rask plus Flint Group mortgage broking process. You can click the link in your podcast player if you're refinancing, investing, a first home buyer, or whatever. You've probably heard Chris on the show many times. Number four, you can connect with our most trusted financial advisors. Whether you're 25 years old, just graduated uni, and looking to set yourself up, or approaching or in retirement, and you've got that nest egg you want to protect and generate a passive income from, you can get in contact with our trusted panel of financial advisors. You can find the link in your podcast player. It's there each and every week. Just click the thing that says financial planning. Number five, if you want specialist insurance advice, as Warren Buffett said, rule number one is don't lose money. And rule number two is don't forget rule number one. Insurance is vitally important, especially when it comes to your number one asset, you. Whether you're a single income household or a couple, and you just want to protect what would happen if, you want to protect your family if something goes wrong, you want to protect your spouse if you lose your job, you want to protect yourself if you hurt yourself on the weekend at footy, insurance is a way to do that. And I think the best way to do insurance is through a financial planner. And there's a few reasons for that, but one of them is sometimes some insurers will only work with financial advisors, but they can also be your companion as you go through the sometimes daunting process of getting insurance done properly. Sometimes you might not even know, but you're not even covered, even though you think you are. So get the right advice. You'll find a link in the show notes to check that out. Number six, buying property. If you're like me and you're thinking of buying property in the next 12 months, or maybe you've already invested and you're looking to downsize, getting the right advice and being able to build wealth through property is a proven strategy. It might be one of the most contentious, but I think that we have one of Australia's best property coaches in our ranks. That is Pete Wargent. Pete is the host of the now super popular Australian property podcast by Rask, and he's also my analyst team's macro consultant. So if you're a member of RAS Corps, you will have seen Pete's name around the traps. He's a property coach and buyer's agent, and he works with a select number of people each and every year. Just a note on this, this is not a commercial thing with Pete. Pete just has great services, so we offer them to the community. And when he fills up, he fills up. You can find out more about Pete's coaching in the show notes. Next up, tracking your portfolio for tax. I think you are, because I think you have to. So we've partnered with Nevexa to help you manage your share and ETF reporting, whether it's tax or performance. All RASC users get 20% off an annual plan with Nevexa. You can sync your portfolio with Nevexa's software, and it automatically tracks your dividends, your capital gains tax, and more. Again, not a commercial partnership. We don't make anything from working with Nevexa, but they do create some great tools which the RASC community uses each and every day. Number eight, want to run your own business? Maybe you already do. If you want more profit, but less stress, less time consumed, and less energy lost, get in contact. We have a partner business called Inflection. The Inflection Accelerator Program is a complete online course that helps you and a community of members engage and follow a proven strategy for growing your business. I'm grateful to be one of the coaches inside the Accelerator program, helping business owners right across Australia. You can find more following the link in your podcast player. It's the one that says coaching. Number nine, if you haven't already checked it out, join over 20,000 other people who tune into the RASC YouTube channel. It is completely free and you get notified when we go live and when we publish podcast episodes. There is a podcast on the RASC network each and every day, as well as bite-sized material that's less than 60 seconds, or those really punchy tutorials and webinars that are just 15 minutes that take you through a really exciting topic, whether it's how to buy a property, whether it's how to pick a dividend ETF. Some of our most popular content actually just explains things like, what the heck is franking credits and how do I calculate if I've got some? That's on our YouTube channel. Number 10, if you want to be a better investor, a saver, a better partner with money, or just understand your own relationship with money, you can do that. All of that by going to the RASC Education website and taking a free course. We've enrolled over 26,000 students at the time of this recording, and we are on a mission to get to 100,000 in the next few years. RASC Education is our mostly free education platform, covering everything from budgeting and automation to the probably, I would say, the best value investing program in the country. So whether you're a value investor, an intermediate investor, you want to know how to value Woolworths shares, or you simply just want to understand what ethical investing is, or buy your first property and what actually happens on settlement day, head to the RASC Education website and enroll in something today. It is free and it supports us, because then I can come on here next month and I can say we've got 27,000, and hopefully we reach critical mass where we can help more Australians manage their money better. Thank you for listening to this long-winded ad. If you want to get in contact with me, you know where to go. There's a link in your show notes. Basically, these 10 services, even though some of them we don't make any money from, support RASC and allow us to produce these podcasts, attract the biggest and best guests from Australia and around the world, and bring them to you to answer your questions. Thank you for being part of the RASC network, and thank you for your ongoing support. Bye for now.